This is NBC News Radio.
aboard the Inland Empire Express. 10:50 a.m., leaving no listeners behind. KCAA.
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Right before me, my newfound hippie side. Once ignore these conspiracies online. Out the window, visions of the earth. Sign me up now, make sure you use your smart. Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive?
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, everyone, to Smart Health Talk Show, and I hope you didn't give up on us there. It's been, like, quite a week. I, like, spent my weekend carrying about 300 panfuls of boiling water all around my house because the ants. I told you. This is like they literally took over everything, so I was spending an hour and a half per day just dealing with them coming to my house. So
we're
doing
a last minute desperate run.
I said, this is it. I'm going to win this war. And I wrote down all this whole article on how to deal with ants, even like when you're doing something like the boiling water thing, mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I learned so much. Like, number one, you don't want to burn yourself. You don't want to spill it on you.
Important. Yes.
Do not want to spill it. But I tell you, I definitely made some huge progress, but there's some secrets to it that I learned, and so I've been writing an article and writing all this information down because I kind of study it because mm-hmm. I want to teach other people because I know ants huge problem with lots of people.
Yes.
But I'm winning this war, believe it or not.
Yay!
And then we have Coach Smallwood, and he is from the Rodale Institute. Everyone, if you joined us last week, you know who Coach is, and you know that he's walking to Washington, D.C., and he is, like, delivering a really important package, and that package is some information that could save this planet. So I think this is some pretty important stuff.
Protect the coach.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Mia. And everyone, that's Mia Mokar, engineer. Woo, woo, woo. And thanks for holding me down last week when we had a little car trouble, and that was, like, really scary, but I feel like the forces were watching out for me because whatever happened to my car would have happened on the freeway. I could have been toast.
Okay.
So I feel like I got like some good something there watching out for me. So I appreciate that. And I really want to thank Coach for his time today because he has been out there walking to Washington, D.C., everyone. And this is for organic farming and climate change. And that is because organic farming can actually reverse climate change. And we've been, you know, doing all this other stuff, as Coach said last week, you know, electric cars, trying to deal with fossil fuels and all that. But guess what? The numbers are still going up.
Hmm.
That system is not working for us.
Yeah.
His system will work for us. And that's why he's walking. It's like 62 miles to Washington, D.C. And he's like talking to farmers and media and business people along the way and you know, sharing his message. But he's delivering that to key policymakers. He's going to be pleading his case. And he's on the line, Mia?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's get
going.
Hey, Coach.
Yeah.
Woo!
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Good evening, or good afternoon to you, I guess. It's the end of our day, or nearly.
Yeah, because Coach is out there walking to Washington, D.C., everyone, so it's like 7 o'clock his time. And so today, you have been on the road.
I have.
Wearing some of the sole off your shoes.
Oh, well, it has been actually a magnificent first few days. We are just incredibly pleased with how things have gone. And let me just quickly deal with the ant problem, okay? Because I think it's important for you to know. I can't
Thank
help
you.
It.
Thank you, Coach. Okay. Please help
ants,
me.
ants walk the same path for up to 45 years. So that's what you have to do. You have to disrupt their path. So you have to find out where they're from and where they're going, and then disrupt that pathway, and they'll eventually go somewhere else. That's some real basic information. But there's lots of different ways to do it. But that's the key: is disrupt disrupt their path.
This is how crazy I was. They came. They were in my house. I had a cup of tea, sitting on like this antique buffet kind of thing that I have. And I had honey in there, raw organic honey. And man, you just think that was the nectar of the gods, man. They were diving in, just like gobbling that stuff down like it was no tomorrow. And so I took the diatomaceous earth and I put that all around it. And I literally watched, they came for like 4 days straight. They just like kept coming, and they had their little path on the diatomaceous earth even, and they just kept coming, drinking until there wasn't a drop left in that tea.
Great. Well, that's a good methodology. They'll take that actually back into their colony.
Okay, so my methodology is right on.
It is. It's a good one.
Okay.
So let's get back to climate change. Yes.
Climate change. We're gonna reverse it. We're gonna reverse it with the important information that Coach is bringing to Washington D.C. So tell us, Coach, like what has been some of the highlights of the past couple days?
Sure, I have to tell you, Elaine, that you get it. You're using the correct word. It's reversal. We're not slowing it down. We're not talking about limiting emissions and so on. We can take it backwards. And,
that's
you know,
right.
we're at that 400 parts per million currently or thereabouts.
It's bad, bad, bad,
it,
bad.
It's out of balance. And that's the whole key here is that we've for some reason, think that we can do better than nature. And that's just not the case. We're not smarter. And we need to work in conjunction and in sync. And in balance with nature, and in some cases, you know, with reversing climate change, we really need to just get out of her way and let her do what she knows best, which is photosynthesis. That it's green plants; it pulls carbon out of the air, it turns it into sugar in the process of photosynthesis, and it gives candy to the microorganisms that live in good, healthy soil. And when you do what is correct for the soil, and they use the tenets of organic agriculture. So you use compost, you use cover crops, you use crop rotation, and you reduce tillage. You allow those microorganisms to hold the carbon in their bodies long enough for it to actually become part of their molecular structure.
And then that's it. Problem gone.
It's generations then that carbon stays in the soil.
That is like so cool. And I tell you, I was like, I loved, you know, working on a web page. And everyone, if you go to smarthealthtalk.com and look under news, you'll see Coach Smallwood right there. Click on that. And I put together all of the research, you know, like those, the published research that you guys did at the Rodale Institute.
Great.
About organic farming. I have all that stuff on the webpage, including our interview from last week. And I think people will find it as a great resource. Once you start looking at what I put together on there, I think you'll see that Coach is just like so right on. I found this one graphic, Coach, and I thought it really said what you were trying to tell us last week about like what you were kind of just saying right there, that this photosynthesis process and the ability of the soil to take the carbon from the air and bring it into the soil and make it part of the soil so it's not even hurting us anymore. When you look at the potential of like where the carbon is coming from, but also the way that you reverse it, soil has the most potential of anything, really. You know, we do photosynthesis in the ocean, but we have control over what's going on in the land, and we're actually contributing by what we're doing on the land. That's what the significance that I got out of it.
And what we're able to do when we put carbon back where it belongs, back in the soil, the plants that grow there are healthier. They're drought resistant, they're disease resistant, they're pest resistant, and they are more nutrient dense. That is what the science
They're like says. Little super microorganisms because they've had their candy and their great carbon diet that has made them like super organisms.
and you know, carbon is the basis of life on the planet. And it doesn't belong in the atmosphere at any higher amount than 350 parts per million. We've thrown it out of balance. So let me tell you a little bit about the walk to date. And we've been out a couple of days. We've walked about 20 plus miles so far. And we have had some great coverage locally in the media. I've been on the front page of some of the local newspapers. And so I have people blowing the horn at us. And I'm walking down the road, and I see cars. They want to pull out into traffic, and they're waiting. And I'm like, okay, go ahead, you know, go. They're like, no, we need to talk to you. You're the guy walking to D.C. And they want to share with me some of the things that they're seeing, talking to me about tractor trailers going past their house with trees, lumber. That's being harvested, and they're saying, you know, those are the same trees that collect the carbon that you're talking about, and what are we doing? You know, we're harvesting them all, and we're having magical moments walking through some of these rural areas. Today in particular, there were a pair of white horses about 150 yards from me, and they lifted their heads up and saw me coming, and they literally did a sprint up to the fence line near the road, and I stopped and had a good, you know, 10 minutes with these two horses, and
oh,
they were like,
I just got goosebumps. They must have just felt your energy, I think.
It was a moment of karma. We got it on film.
It's so significant too. I mean, it's so symbolic in the same way, you know. It's like the purity. Because we're trying to bring back the purity to our food, our air, our environment, instead of living in this poisonous place. It's like everywhere. That freaking glyphosate, it is like so concentrated now. I know Leah Zerbre from Rodale News, when she came on the show, she said that it's like in the rain now.
And well, like, here's what happens. Glyphosate can indeed be bound up in the soil. And that's the claim of the manufacturers of that particular product. The claim is that it's benign once it hits the soil because it gets locked up and it's unavailable. It actually binds with clay. Now, what happens is clay gets saturated with glyphosate, and it can't take up anymore.
So that's it. I'm done.
Now what? Well, it has to go somewhere else because it hits the clay. The clay is full of glyphosate, and it runs off who knows where into groundwater, into ponds and lakes and streams and so on. And we're finding it everywhere now. It's persistent in our environment. It's in, oh, God, you know, they're finding it in breast milk, okay? Enough.
Yeah.
And so it's time for nature, as I said last week, nature has provided us with a gift, and the gift is historical weather events. She keeps bonking us on the head, sort of gently.
Kind of saying, wake up, everybody.
With a drought, with a flood, with a winter storm.
I need to do something else now? What do I need? What's
yeah,
next?
Yeah, well,
you know?
it's scary.
I don't even want to know what's next. You know something I wanted you to explain, Coach, that I just think is so cool? Because I think a lot of people, like when they hear us talk about, you know, no tilling, you know, the soil and that. They're kind of like, maybe like how I felt at first when I thought about it. I thought, wait a minute, how do you farm when you're not like tilling the soil? And people don't realize that, you know, like there's special machinery that it doesn't matter that you don't till the soil to get the seed under the ground.
That's correct. So
tell people about that.
Here's conventional no-till. Let me tell you the wrong way first. Conventional no-till, they plant a cover crop and they come in and they spray it with glyphosate and kill the cover crop and then they plant their corn and soy. That's no-till conventional. It means that they have to spray a pesticide, and it means that we have to continue to be beholden to a GMO crop that's resistant to that pesticide. It's wrong, and clearly walking the last 2 days, we saw fields that had persistent weed pressure. The glyphosate doesn't work anymore. They're having to use now more persistent and more dangerous, more toxic chemicals like atrazine, and now they're lobbying for the reintroduction and more use of things like 2,4-D.
Agent Orange, everybody. And that atrazine, Coach, isn't that like there was one coach that, I mean, one scientist that came out of Berkeley, and he was saying, hey, this is like turning male frogs to female frogs or something like that.
Yeah, it's
that's
again,
scary
it's
for men, everybody.
And imagine if we look at now having to spray three inputs, glyphosate, atrazine, 2,4-D, what's that cocktail look like when all three of them are in the soil? What's occurring? That's not being studied at all. So that's conventional no-till.
Okay.
Let me talk about organic no-till.
Okay, yeah, this is the magic formula, right?
this is the way we would prefer to have everybody do it, because this is the way that will help us to create the organic planet that I'm walking for. We developed at Rodale about 15 years ago a device called the roller crimper. So what we do is we plant the cover crop. It could be rye or vetch, and sometimes we combine rye and vetch. Both of those plants are legumes, so they, number one, they attach nitrogen, they are able to take nitrogen out of the air and fix it in the soil. So the cover crop is actually a nitrogen source. It's a fertilizer.
Yeah, and they're spraying glyphosate on it.
Well, we don't.
Yeah, you
we
do. Let it, the other guys we, do.
We let it grow.
Uh-huh.
Just before it goes to seed, we come in with our roller crimper. Now, so in the process here, we have a green plant on that soil capturing nitrogen, first of all, and putting it in the soil, capturing carbon dioxide and putting carbon in the soil, part of the solution that we've been talking about all along. So there's two things it does. Number three, it keeps that soil from eroding away and ending up in the Gulf of Mexico in one of those dead zones. So three benefits so far. And then we bring in our roller crimper on the front of our tractor. The roller crimper is attached. On the back of the tractor, we put our planter. So if you can, in your mind's eye, see this field of rye, the roller crimper lays it down flat and
like a carpet,
exactly like a carpet. That's what I call it. It rolls it down like a carpet, and it crimps it every 8 inches and kills it. In that same path with the tractor, remember the planter's on the back?
Yeah,
drill a furrow right through that carpet that you called it, and we plant our corn, soy, squash, pumpkins, whatever our crop is. So we roll it down and plant all in one fell swoop. Now, as those plants, those seeds germinate and create the corn or soy or whatever crop we put on that particular field, that carpet that we talked about, remember we crimped it and killed it? That's the weed barrier. It doesn't allow the weed seeds underneath it to germinate, because it shades them out. And it gives that plant that we had put the seed in the ground, it germinates, and no weeds.
And I bet water. What about water, Coach? Are we, like, saving water, too, with that carpet on top?
Well, of course. Yeah, we keep the soil cool. We keep the temperature consistent. So we're holding water in place. We're creating a weed barrier. So I can talk to you about that cover crop that captures nitrogen as a fertilizer, captures carbon out of the atmosphere, and gives it to the microorganisms. It stops soil from eroding, and then when the plants germinate, it acts as a weed barrier. So there's four benefits to one cover crop, and I can roll and crimp the cover crop and plant my seed all in one path across the field.
That's what I'm talking about. That is so friggin' cool. That is like the coolest thing ever, because look what you just explained to us, Coach. I mean, that is like such a perfect system, because that's one of the biggest complaints with organic farmers is like having to deal with weeds. And that's what I've had our top scientist in the – well, I had actually the guy from Beyond Pesticides on the show also, and Leah said that the number one reason for pesticides is like for weed control.
Correct. And so, there's lots of weed pressure, and farmers like their field to look neat. They really do. It's part of their aesthetics. They want their fields to look clean. Well, I have to tell you, Elaine, walking today through some of the agricultural fields, I had GMO corn and GMO soy on both sides of the road, on either side of me for miles. And I saw weed pressure that was just, I would say for that particular farmer, embarrassing. He had no way of controlling it, has found out for sure that glyphosate doesn't work anymore, the atrazine didn't work, and now they're lobbying for this toxic poison, 2,4-D.
Yeah, like we want to eat that stuff on our food, you know? That is yum. I want to feed that to my children and like
pregnant
women.
They want that to enter into our food system, okay? Enough's enough. It's wrong. It doesn't make any sense. Sociologically, economically, environmentally, it just doesn't work for us. And so that's why I'm on the march. It's for an organic planet.
For an organic planet, everybody. We're walking for an organic planet, because what Coach just said, that is the magic formula, everybody. Just think. How perfect is that? And I mean, when I read that research, Coach, I read it like years ago. And that's why I've been talking on this show about that over and over again for 3 years, because I believe in it so much. That's why I'm so excited that you're doing this. And I'm so excited to have you on the show, because I know this is the answer. This is the answer to saving our planet and giving everyone healthy, nutritious, organic food that prevents chronic disease and doesn't pollute the environment, and it protects our fetuses and our children from diseases. I mean, who would not want that? That's why we have to stop buying these products, everyone. You have to speak up. You've got to talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, support organic farmers. We have to support them. And I every time I envision this whole thing, I mean, people don't realize, like, that vetch thing that grows, it's, like, really tall, too, huh? It's, like, 5 feet or something?
No, the vetch is probably a couple feet tall.
Oh, okay, a couple feet. But what I thought was really cool is, like, how that crimper, like, you roll that down the field, and that crimper, like you said, it breaks it and it kills it. And what it does is, like, the stem, it's actually breaking the stem of the vetch into pieces.
And it's every 8 inches.
Every 8 inches, it's breaking the stem so that it crimps it, so that it's laying flat on the carpet, flat on the ground. And then you just roll over it with a tractor. And then on the back, the way that you can you have like something that goes like down through the fetch, because it has to go through that carpet layer, and it has to get down into the soil, and then it has to make a hole in the soil, and then you have a little thing that drops that seed into that little hole that you just made. I just thought, yes, this is like so perfect. This is exactly what we need to be doing in all farms. Then we don't even have to worry about weeds. Then we're using less water. We're adding all this nutrition and we're feeding those little hungry little microorganisms candy, aren't we?
We're allowing them to thrive. And if you come to a field where the roller crimper has been implemented, I can walk you into a cornfield and we can go down in between rows of corn, and I use my arms down near the ground. I spread the corn apart, and there's that layer, that carpet you're talking about. It's dead now. It's turned brown, but there are no weeds in between those rows, because that carpet, as we're calling it, will not allow weed seeds to germinate. They shade them out so those seeds never see the sun.
And also tell us what happens after you do that for a few seasons, because we had the people that use goats to get rid of weeds on like the side of, you know, in parks and places like that instead of the pesticides. And I know that what they told me is that once the goats have like came and eaten for a couple of seasons, because they get the plants before they go to seed. Like you said, you right. do this before it goes to seed. And what happens with the goats when they're eating these plants is after you've done this for a few years, there's not any seeds left.
That's right.
So
all they're eating is vegetation then.
Yeah. So there goes the weed problem, and then you may not even need the goats as much in the future because you've gotten rid of it. And what you're saying to me with this system too is that after we do this for a while, it's like our weed problem is actually going to go away.
We can grow cover crops and leave pathways of cover crop in between rows. And we, in some cases, with vegetable production, for example, in the pathways where you walk in between rows of tomatoes or peppers or any of the other specialty crops, we actually mow the cover crop down, and it looks almost like turf. And we let it grow back because it continues to do exactly what we want. It's a green plant. It's sucking the carbon out of the air, feeding the candy down to the microbes right in between the two tomato plants. Oh, and I forgot to say, it's pulling nitrogen and fertilizing at the same time. We get 3 or 4 benefits out of these cover crops.
Well, you just let us know if you have to go, Coach, but you know I want to pick your brain on this stuff because I want people to know this stuff. It is so important. Like, okay, this is like the next thing I wanted you to let everyone understand, because like you just said now, you said that cover crop is like taking it's adding nitrogen to the soil, but it's taking it from the air as well, right?
And correct.
Like, right now, like with the conventional guys, they're using a nitrogen fertilizer. And like we talked a little bit last week, that nitrogen fertilizer comes from natural gas. So you're getting instead of a compost nutrition added to the soil or this cover crop added to the soil, you're getting your nutrients from natural gas, which that doesn't even compute in my mind. Like I'm just like, what? But you know, this is what I experienced firsthand, Coach. I went to a beautiful lake in Montana, and that lake was the grossest thing that I ever saw. It was covered in algae, like all different colors of algae. And like I actually think I have nightmares from going to that lake, having that algae like all over my body. It was really nasty. And that's not an isolated incident. That's happening to lakes all across the country from runoff.
Lakes, streams, Gulf of Mexico, Chesapeake Bay. It's runoff of nitrogen fertilizer that the plant couldn't use, but that the fertilizer salesperson said to the farmer, here's how many tons per acre you need for your crop. The crop can only use so much. And so once the plant can't take it up anymore, it's water soluble, meaning that it gets flushed. So it ends up in local streams, into the rivers, into the ponds, into the lakes, into the Chesapeake Bay, into the Gulf of Mexico. The dead zones are all over the country. And the other nutrient that gets flushed is phosphorus. And, you know, the estimates right now are we are between 30 and 50 years of phosphorus left. It's a mined nutrient, and they're telling us we have 30 to 50 years, and that nutrient is gone. And so what are we going to do, mine it out of the Gulf of Mexico? I mean, who's going to pay for that? So it's just totally backward, and it's insulting to our good Mother Earth.
And tell us what that word is, Coach, that word that shows that this system does not work, because it is not a regenerative system, is it?
That's right. Thank you. Regenerative to us is leaving better today than it was yesterday, every day. And I would say to the USDA, when I get to Washington, D.C., is that what we're doing? Are we leaving the planet better today with the cultural practices, the methodologies, and the products involved in our food system? Is it a better food system today than it was yesterday, every day? I beg to differ. I disagree.
Okay, I have a really big question for you, Coach. So is this system, now you're talking about our food system here, but our food is not just being used for food. Our food is being used for other industries. And I just feel like the food that we're growing, that some of this food is really more for some of these other chemical industries than they are for the people of this country. And they're using our taxpayer dollars to subsidize these crops that are then being used for other industries as well. And that's really pissing me off.
well put. Me too. Why are we growing corn across the country to be used for ethanol? It's not food. I walked through farmland the last couple of days, and I didn't see anything that was food meant for human beings.
Really?
No.
So all these, like, you just told us, you walked and just, like, for hours and hours, all you saw was field after field. And, like, none of those fields are meant for people.
No, it's all corn and soy. That's what dominates our agricultural system. 90% of the corn is GMO. 93% of the soy is GMO.
100% of the sugar beets.
100% of the sugar beets. It's and you know, let your listeners know this, and this is a USDA factoid. 75% of the food in your grocery store contains genetically modified ingredients. So walk through the store, fill your cart up, and understand that 3/4 of what's in your cart, unless you shop organically, especially the processed foods, they include genetically modified corn and soy.
I try to just eat real food myself. I want to see that it was a real food when I started. and I know I'm good.
there's some debate now about labeling and should we label GMO. And our thought is we already have a label. It's called USDA Certified Organic. If it has the Certified Organic label on it, we feel very confident that you can trust it, and we know that GMO ingredients are not allowed in the organic system. So when people walk into the grocery store and demand organic, and that's all they want, and they start to talk to the people that run the grocery stores, the managers and the produce people, and say, look, this is not what I want. I'm not going to buy this. I want organic. I want on those little stickers that they put on the fruits and vegetables, those PLU codes, they call them.
Right.
They have to start with a 9. If it starts with a 9,
number
it's certified
nine.
Organic. Number 9. And so you pick an apple up and it starts with the number 4, put it back and ask for the produce manager.
You can have like 40 pesticides on there, people.
Crazy. I was also at an orchard today. Really lovely people, good farmers, but they're not organic. And they were defending, you know, what they do as a commercial grower. And seriously, I would never ever bash these people. But they had a sign at their little farm stand that said, make sure you wash your apples before you eat them. Now, why do we have to have that, you know, that warning?
I personally don't. I think I like to get my fruits and vegetables where I don't, where they're, I don't know. They seem to taste different after you wash a lot of things.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person, I guess because I had so much fresh produce out of the garden, that I know how it tastes when you do that, when you just pick something and you eat it.
The best produce out of the garden is the stuff that never makes it inside the house.
Okay, I love that.
You're standing there eating those grape tomatoes, and you're taking a cucumber right off the vine, and it's just the best. That's the way our food system should work. We need to get back to more regional growers. We need to get back to small family farms.
Okay, guess what I have in my hand right now, Coach? I have a Cinderella pumpkin.
Oh, sweet!
How does it look, Mia? Isn't it beautiful? It is just so. This pumpkin I got at the farmer's market, and this assistant superintendent of a school, which after I fought to get organic food in schools for 5 years, meet a farmer that's there with organic produce, and he's assistant superintendent. I guess he's really been trying to get healthy foods into his school district as well, and get some local oranges and stuff like that. But this, I was so excited because I love it when I learn new things about produce. And I guess this one has a really small seed cavity, so it's just like solid pumpkin.
Wow.
Yeah. Very tasty. Highly recommend that you, once you're done using it for the Halloween holiday, you should eat it.
Yummy.
Oh, yeah. That's all I'm going to do with it, was like eat it. Okay. I was going to make like some pumpkin soup or pumpkin pie or something like that. And even just steaming pumpkin.
Beautiful, though.
You know, you could just steam it in chunks and, like, put it on your plate.
No, don't cut it. It's too pretty.
I know. That's the reason I haven't cut it yet. And I also brought something else I learned that was new this week. It was a hunter squash. It was a hunter squash instead of the butternut squash. Have you seen those?
I have not.
Yeah, I know. I love it because I used to sell produce for 5 years, organic produce. And so whenever I find a new variety, I'm like, oh, I have to learn that. But this one is yellow. I'm going to send you a picture of it, okay? It's like really bright yellow. Compare it. See the difference, Mia?
Yes,
see how yellow?
Is. Yes.
So I was just wondering if, you know, the beta carotene was different. But, you know, like butternut squash is still pretty orange. When you look
it's all about the color. So Elaine, let me give you a quick tip on the pumpkin. I'm going to give you a quick recipe, and then I'm going to have to go get some dinner for myself.
Okay, you go.
What I like to do with the pumpkin is cut the handle off. Of course, scrape out the seeds, and there's you want to roast the seeds and everything, but you clean it out, and then I make a really hearty soup. And whatever your favorite soup is. And then I fill the pumpkin cavity with the soup and put it on a baking dish and bake it in the oven until the pumpkin softens. And then when you serve the soup, you take your spoon, take a scoop off of the side of the pumpkin and add that to that hearty soup that you put in there.
Okay, that's way perfect. Because I'll take like steamed butternut squash or whatever, and I'll just like put chunks of that in my soup after I serve it. I'll pour the soup in the bowl, and then I'll put the chunks of the butternut squash in there. But that is like way more fun.
Yeah, you can
what a great presentation.
It's beautiful for the holiday season with Thanksgiving coming up.
I'm going to do that, and I'm going to take a picture. Okay, I'm going to add that to my website. I love it. And you know what, Coach? I'm so proud of you, and I'm so excited about what you're doing. You're giving me hope. And I think you're giving lots of getting choked up. You're giving lots of people hope. And for those of us that have been fighting for the right just to have clean food, you know, for people to be healthy. You know, that's what I wish for people more than anything, because if you have your health, you have everything. And it just changes the way you think. It can change your attitude. It gives you the ability to go out there and support yourself, just being healthy. So, and support your family.
Elaine, we were at the march, the climate march, you know, down in New York City. And all the dust settled after that was over. And we were sitting together at the Rodale Institute, and the discussion was, okay, well, now what? What is everybody doing? And it went silent. And we were able to say very proudly, and I thank you for using the word hope, we were able to say very proudly that there is hope, and we're doing something about it. That's what the walk is for.
That's what I like seeing. I like seeing some action. Woo! We're going to Washington, D.C., everybody. We got Coach on the way. And, Coach, we believe in you. And we know that what you're bringing is an important message. And thank you so much. I'm going to be following you all along the way. And we've got everyone, please go to our website and follow the links and go join Coach. And you can donate some money towards the cause so that they can do some more research. And we can really start to prove that this is the way to go, everybody. So support Coach, support the Rodale Institute, and thank you so much, Coach, for joining us today. This really means a lot to me. I can't tell you. It's made just having this show on for 3 years all worth it. This is like the ultimate to me.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate those
Because I feel like we're doing something here. We're going to do something.
Why don't we catch up next week and do another segment together after a few more days?
Oh, I would love that. These are going to be my most treasured interviews of all, everyone. This is like Coach Mark Smallwood he's the director of the Rodale Institute, and he's walking for an organic planet. So thanks, Coach, and sure. I hope you find some really good organic food for Din Din.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone. Okay, thanks again, Coach.
Bye.
Okay, well, hey, Mia, what do you think about that? Isn't that just, like, so interesting?
Well, was it interesting? Yes, I had no idea that you could reverse. It just seems so gloom and doom now. It's like, okay, maybe we can change things up, but we'll keep it, like, at the same and not let it get worse. I didn't know you can reverse it.
I know. Isn't that, like the most exciting thing? Yes.
Yes, and I was like, it made me sad when he told me that corn being grown for other things or whatever and not for eating. I'm like, what?
Absolutely.
Are we in the Twilight Zone? Really?
Oh, yeah. Like those Pepsi Pepsi bottle, those soda bottles. They're like, oh, well, these are like part corn. But what they're not telling you is that when you go to the recycling plant, that doesn't work with the PET, the plastic. Is 100% recyclable. So at least we could just get people to recycle and put their plastic.
We could recycle
that plastic forever almost.
Yeah, I would think we have plenty, huh?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we could just keep recycling it.
Yes.
And not even have, we could say, screw you, we don't need any new oil because we know how to recycle plastic, and we're just going to keep reusing this plastic over and over again, and we don't even need to go bow down to all these people that we're bowing down to make bottles, you know? Plus, we're learning that I think I might have mentioned this to you before, that cellulose, like they're looking at all these different ways to make all these chemicals and do all this stuff.
Yes.
But one of the most exciting things that I've heard is cellulose that comes from shrimp, the crustaceans, the outside bodies of the shrimp that we throw away.
Yes.
Like millions and millions of pounds of these shells.
Uh-huh.
They can turn that into plastic, and it's non-toxic. It dissolves in the ocean.
Elaine, did not know that.
Yeah,
really?
It'll help plants grow, and they can make plastic out of this shrimp crustacean that is just waste.
Whoa.
I am a little bit hopeful too that some of the companies that are not my favorite companies out there at all, but at least they are looking at sustainable ways, because like what was Coach just telling us, phosphorus, you know, we mine this, it's gone. We are not going to have this anymore. We have to learn to farm without using these outside
things. Well, if they don't do that, it's going to happen anyway. one way or the other. The other one is that we lose things forever.
Well, people think that this stuff is like endless. We are on a finite planet here. It only has so many resources. Unless we start going and mining the moon or Mars or something.
Well, I don't think we need to go off and start destroying other planets. I think we need to take care of the one we're on. Seriously.
That is so wise. You know? That is so wise, Mia. And you are exactly right.
But with people like you bringing this awareness, which a lot of things I had I'm not joking.
Okay, what about helium?
No.
Okay, like helium's another example.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, helium, right?
Yes.
Helium balloons. We all think that's all cool and everything.
Sure.
Well, helium is a finite gas. It comes from meteorites crushing to the Earth. That's how we got helium on this planet. From other meteorites crashing to the planet.
So you are such a brainiac.
So you think we have like a lot of this stuff around?
No, we only not.
And we're running out of helium, people. We've been using up all the helium. So the people that make all those balloons and all that, they're sweating it right now.
Well, it just makes me wonder. We were brainwashed to believe this was okay. And now that you're bringing awareness, it makes you at least think twice. Some people are trying to take action. What you're doing. You know, people are listening like, oh,
but
I never
isn't that machine the coolest thing that you could
yes,
play?
Yes, I can actually visualize what you were saying. I'm like, brilliant.
Yeah, they did. No weed problem. You just had this carpet.
Oh, let me have that in the
desert,
girl.
This carpet and that machine just like goes underneath all those branches and makes a hole and drops the seed down underneath there.
So I love it.
It's in its little cubby hole, you know, place all protected. I just thought that was like the greatest thing ever.
That's so smart.
It is smart. And we need to teach all the farmers.
We need to help our farmers
transition.
Yes, absolutely.
We need to support them and help them transition. I'm hoping we're going to be doing a lot more. Oh, wait, I have one other surprise in my bag here that I wanted to share. We only have another minute or so.
These
are called jujubes. And these jujubes. Yeah, jujubes. And they're kind of like a different kind of date. It's
nice.
Kind of like a date, but it's not as sweet. It does. So people that don't like super sweet would love these jujubes.
And what is that, from a bush or a tree? Where do you get jujubes from?
At the farmer's market.
Oh, nice.
That's where I got this stuff, at a little tiny farmer's market. You can find treasure there. And I just want to let people know, if you want to have like a pomegranate, if you fill a bowl of water, cut it like in quarters or so, and put it under the water and push the seeds out, you won't stain your hands. And then you just pour the water off, and you can just eat a whole big bowl of pomegranate seeds. You can put them on your cereal, in your salad, you know, on top of desserts. Pomegranate seeds are great.
I'm going to do that.
And they're so full of fiber, and they're sweet. You know, hopefully you get a sweet one. Not all of them are sweet, but hopefully you get a sweet one. But I tell you, I like down like 3 pomegranates in a row. So, okay, we're at the end of the show today, everyone. Look for our podcast. Go to smarthealthtalk.com.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.